بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على مبعوث رحمة العالمين سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين وبعد. So continue reading from the book تدريب السالك إلى أقرب إلى قراءة أقرب المسالك في مذهب مالك, which explains the مذهب of سيدنا الإمام مالك بن أنس إمام دار الهجرة رضي الله عنه. And we are making our way through the chapters dealing with prayer, the ritual prayer, Salah. And we've arrived at the chapter dealing with Salat al-Jumu'ah, so the Friday congregational prayer. The Prophet ﷺ, he established the first Friday congregational prayer when he made his hijrah to al-Madinah al-Munawwara ala sahibiha afdhal as-salat wa salam. And he did it in a place that is now known as a mosque was erected there, known as Masjid al-Jumu'ah. And that's a few kilometers outside of actually where al-Haram is, Masjid al-Nabawi is. So that was on his way towards al-Medina, and it was a Friday, and he established the first Friday prayer there. And then thereon, the Friday prayer was in al-Haram, or in the Prophet's mosque, alayhi afdhal salat wa salam. So Jumu'ah, Friday prayer, it is the day of Eid, or the weekly day of Eid for Muslims. So it is a type of an occasion. When the Prophet ﷺ established the Friday prayer, he also established it thereon after the Hijrah, after Fath Mecca in Mecca, and then in other places. And there are certain conditions for it to be established, which we'll go through. Some of them will deal with the person who needs to attend Friday prayer. Some of them will be with the jama, which is the place of the prayer. What are the conditions that need to be fulfilled? And some of them will deal with the imam, the one who leads the Friday prayer. So he begins here, fasl fi shurut al-jum'ah wa ahkamiha. So talking about the conditions of jum'ah and the ahkam, the legal rulings pertaining to it. So he says, rahimahullah, waqtul jum'ati kadh-dhuhri. The time of Jum'ah is like the time of Dhuhr. So in terms of its time, it begins from Zawal, which is high noon, and it extends until the time of Asr prayer. Of course, we know in the Maliki school, there's also a called Waqt Ikhtiyari and Waqt Dhururi, that there is a preferred time and that there is also a extended necessary time. The extended necessary time for Dhuhr begins actually with the time of Asr, and then it extends actually all the way till Maghrib. And we call this waqt al-mushtarak, the common time between Dhuhr and Asr. Customarily, we would not delay Jum'ah until that point. So it would be, just like in Dhuhr, it would be sinful to do so, ma'as siha. So it would be sinful to do so, but it would be technically considered still Jum'ah if we were to delay it that for that reason. If we have a legitimate reason, however, then it could be done. But normally, we would wait until Ba'd al-Zawal, high noon, and then begin it at that point. And then we would try to finish both the khutbatin, the two khutab, the two sermons, as we'll get to, and the prayer when before Asr time. And it takes the place of the Dhuhr prayer. For someone who is attending the Jum'ah prayer, they don't have to pray the Dhuhr prayer, even if it's not an obligation upon them. So for women and young children who it's not an obligation, but they nevertheless are either recommended or permitted to attend, if they pray the Jum'ah, they don't have to pray the Dhuhr prayer at that point. وهي فرض عين على المكلف الذكر الحر المقيم الخالي من الأعذار. And it is an individual obligation upon the mukallaf, right, the one who has met the requisite preconditions for both validity and wujub, or validity and obligation of a particular ritual devotion. So the two general ones are Islam, so one has to be Muslim first for it supposed to be valid, and according to an opinion for it to be obligatory, and one has to be of post-pubescent age. So here, that would apply to all of the ibadat, so not just Friday prayer, but all of them. So that's why he doesn't mention those two separately, because it's understood that it's not just for Friday prayer, but all the different prayers. However, he mentions the ones that are specific to the Friday prayer here. So he says, obviously, al-mukallaf, which means the one who is held responsible for their deeds and acts, al-dhakar, males. So females are not required to attend Jumu'ah prayer. They are permitted or even recommended to attend the Jumu'ah prayer. It has been the practice in some cultures around the Muslim world where women generally don't attend the Jumu'ah prayer and there's not even an accommodation for them. That is not, at least in the Maliki school, that is not a religious precept. It's not something that's based upon the Sharia stipulates that, but it's more of a cultural practice. Nowadays, I would say it depends upon the cultural context. So I would say certainly for us, people like us living in the West, most certainly we need to have accommodation for women, and it shouldn't be on par with the accommodation for men and shouldn't be any less. And you know, our masajid, which we might talk about a little bit later, have kind of morphed and evolved into something more than just a place of prayer. So for many, it's kind of the lifeline of their Islam, and it's something they do once a week. So to deny women that access, I think, would be a big mistake and a lack of contextual understanding of the Sharia. So yes, they're not required to go, but I would say certainly if they're permitted to go and even in our particular times recommended to go, then the accommodation should be there for them to attend. So al-dhakar al-hur, which doesn't really apply to us anymore, someone who is free, not someone in a state of bondage. Al-muqim. Here, al-muqim means the one who is resident in that place. We will find in the Jumu'ah chapter, there's a distinction made between al-muqim wal-mustawtin, or the one who has watan in that place. So they say iqama, which means residence, even if temporary, is 4 days plus, as we know from the chapter on the traveling. So if someone is not living in a particular place, but they're going to be there the week, or in other words, 4 days where they're going to see 20 prayers, they'll be resident in that place. Then in this case, we would say Jumu'ah is fard ayn. Jumu'ah is an obligation on that particular person to attend, even though they don't live there. If they're staying less than 4 days, so they're staying 2 days, 3 days, and they're living on the fourth day, and the second day happens to be Jumu'ah, are they required to attend? No, they're not required to attend. They may attend, and as we said, if they do attend, then the Jumu'ah counts for them, and they don't have to pray the Dhuhr prayer. If they don't attend Jumu'ah, then they have to pray, obviously, the Dhuhr prayer. That's binisbat al-muqim. The one who has al-muwattin or al-mustawtin is the one who has an intention to live there indefinitely. So like, this is where I live. I live in this place. I'm not traveling. So if you have the intention to live there indefinitely, then this person is going to be looked at in terms of the requirement for the Jumu'ah itself, not in terms of the personal obligation. That's a distinction we have to be clear about. Because in the Maliki school, it requires 12 men who are of that particular disposition. In other words, they live there and they have an intention to live there indefinitely, not they're living there temporarily. The Mu'allaq here, he says, if they have the intention to live there at least a year, then that's generally then someone who's, because now people nowadays have work contracts and it's a year contract or 2 years, they know what's going to happen after that. For all intents and purposes, someone in that particular position, then you're considered someone who's made the intention to live there indefinitely. So we're not talking like a temporary days or weeks type of residence, but something that, you know, at least a year, then we would say you're someone who has mustawtin, that you're living there. Ibn Salah in his Muqaddam and Hadith, he says that someone who lives in a place 4 years or more, nusiba ilayha, then you can be from that place. Right, so then you're affiliated with that place. So someone wants to be a secondary, like from Alexandria, Egypt, or al-Harawi from Herat in Afghanistan. If they lived in that place 4 years or more, then they're considered to be from that place, even though they weren't necessarily born there and so forth. And you know, as an aside, that's kind of a nice, beautiful thing that we have this, I think there's a very distinctly kind of Muslim understanding of what it means to belong to somewhere. Not the modern sense of nationalism, right? But this idea of watan, right? There is a khabar, it's not necessarily a strong hadith, but the meaning is true. حُبُّ الْوَطَن مِنَ الْإِيمَانِ. That the love of the watan, you know, the place where you are making intention to stay, at least for, you know, a long time, is from iman, to love that place. And so, you know, no one, even if one is, you know, temporarily in a place, and I'm so fortunate, sometimes we see people, they say like, well, I'm only staying here because I have to, and I don't like it, and it's horrible, and this and that. You'll make it more horrible by having that outlook. But if you kind of say, this is my watan for now, right, then I will see this as my home. And there's some abiyat that I don't memorize, but of Habib Aidar Rahman al-Aidarus, who lived in the 18th century, and he said, the meaning of which is, your home is wherever you make your home. Your home is the people that you know and the people that you interact with. You know, that makes it home, that makes it your watan. And it's not necessarily what your passport is, and, you know, what your national ID card looks like, and that sort of thing. So I think that's kind of a beautiful concept, and it comes into play when we talk about Jummah, because Jummah needs to be established in a place where there is a permanence about the place. And we're going to get to that in a second. So, al-dhakar al-muqim, right, the one who is resident is required to attend. Al-khali min al-a'zar, and the one who doesn't have an excuse not to attend. Like who? The sick person, the traveling person, they're not required to attend. Al-mumarrid, or someone who's working in tamrid, which means you're attending to a sick person also, right? And don't take that excuse if you're, you know, your wife has a toothache and like, oh, I got to stay home, take care of her, I'm not going to Jummah today. Yani, that's kind of a little bit manipulation of the hukum. Yani, technically it's, but if someone really, like, you know, can't tend to their needs, and, you know, in a sense that if you leave them for an hour or more, that it would be a great strain and difficulty, then khalas, you have the udhr to, you know, or if a man is staying home with the kids who are sick, and maybe the wife's at work, then they have the udhr, they have the excuse to stay home. For tamrid, for safar, someone who is traveling, or someone who is sick themselves, they are not required to attend the Jummah. وَشَرْتُ وُجُوبُهَا وَصِحَّتِهَا. So here, he's talking about the conditions of validity, of obligation and validity for the Jummah itself. Not the people attending, not me and you, the Fard Ain part, but kind of the communal obligation, the Fard Kifaya part. When do we have to do Jummah? Like, we as a community, in what places are we going to do Jummah? And what are the conditions of validity for that? The first one, he says, that I alluded to, istithanu jama'atin muslimin tataqarra bihim qaryatun fi mahallin yumkinu al-mathwa bihi shita'an wa sayfan wa mabdan wa lawmin akhsas. So, istithanu jama'atin muslimin. Number one, a jama'a, a community of Muslims, تَتَقَرَّ بِهِمْ قَرْيَةٌ. تَتَقَرَّ بِهِمْ قَرْيَةٌ means that this is us kind of a little bit of a pre-modern sort of way of stating it, and we'll contextualize it in a second. That can form a community or a town or a place to live independently. So if you think of the pre-modern world, the way it used to work, you look at the old and ancient cities in the world and you see where they were established, they needed a couple things for that to happen. One, sustainability of life. So usually it would be established around a place where you can get fresh water. So the Nile in Egypt, for example, all of the major cities are around the Nile, right, or close to the Nile, because if you live out in the desert, it's kind of hard to live there, or nearly impossible. So they would have it around those places. So it could be around a lake, around a river, fresh water aquifers underneath the ground. These would be the places where cities and towns would be established, the ability to sustain farming also, so irrigation, so all of those things would be considered for sustainability of life. A secondary issue that they looked at was the ability to protect the place. In other words, from an outside opponent or enemy or adversary. So that's why you find cities within mountain passes, right? In Medina, Yathrib, for example, to the north you have Jabal Uhud, to the south you have Jabal Ayr, and then to the east and west you have Al-Harratain. You have the two volcanic strips. So as we know from Ghazwat al-Khandaq, there was only a very small space to the north by which the Quraysh army was able to actually penetrate, and that's where they built the Khandaq, where they built the trench. Otherwise, all the rest of Yathrib or Medina was impossible to pass with regular horse, right? So they'd have to walk in on foot, and then that's a large army would have, it's like you'd be decimated as you walk in. So those things usually, in terms of, you know, natural, you know, disposition, would be the things required for the qarya or the town to be established and recognized. Nowadays, not so much. Nowadays we have new towns and new cities being built, because many of these things can be brought in. So we have cities being built in deserts where there are no natural resources to be found, and everything is brought to them, you know, via shipment. And even though it's technically a sort of a precarious position, for all intents and purposes now, we would still consider those to be what they're talking about here, that Jum'ah would need to be established there. So anywhere where there's a community of Muslims and they're able to live independently, then the Jum'ah is valid there, and they should establish it. And they are able to build a place that is dedicated to Jum'ah. So it's not mentioned in this smaller treatise, but in Aqrab al-Masalik, it does say that it has to be a place, even if temporarily, that is dedicated to Jum'ah. It's not a condition that the five prayers are established there, they said, but this is Masjid al-Jama'ah, or this is the place where Jum'ah is going to be prayed. Yani, in other words, solely dedicated for that. So technically in the Maliki school, it can't be like a college classroom or a hospital room, or you know, somewhere that is being used for other purposes, and you're just taking a room out and doing Jum'ah there. Maybe even a chapel room in a hospital would be problematic too, because it's multi-purpose. There's other religions that are using it. So, and above and beyond that, the idea of the 12 people who have to be mustawtan, who are living there, right, and have an intention to live there. So if someone's just working there, like if you live in New Jersey and you're making a commute to New York City, you don't actually live in New York City, and so you're not going to be counted amongst the 12 who are the ones who are considered to be the people for Jum'ah in this particular place. So, is that true in all of the other schools? No, not necessarily. So I don't want people to feel like, oh, okay, no more Jum'ah in the university or in the hospital or anything like that. We're just talking specifically about the Maliki school. So the Jama'ah itself has to be a dedicated Jama'ah that's established for Jum'ah, even though maybe the five prayers aren't regularly established there. And it has to be built from something that's not a temporary structure. So that's why he says, "Mabni walaw min akhsas," which is like, you know, palm, date, tree, leaves. If that's what people use to build their structures, then that's fine. But if you live in a place where people build their structures by brick and mortar, concrete, you know, drywall, then that's how the mosque should be built. And then it should be dedicated for that specific purpose. And when we talk about awqaf and endowments, generally speaking, it is lit-ta'bid, which means you perpetually, you dedicate it for this place. There is some latitude in the Maliki school about if you're going to move to somewhere else and you need to dispense with this one, but I'm not talking about that right now. But generally speaking, it has to be a dedicated place. وَإِنَّمَا تَصِحُّ بِحُدُورِ أَثْنَ عَشَرَ مِنَ الْمُتَوَطِّنِينَ الَّذِينَ تَجِبُ عَلَيْهِمْ بَاقِيِينَ لِسَلَامِهَا. And also 12 permanent resident men have to attend from the beginning all the way to the end of the salam, not including the imam. So that means that if you only have 12, if any one of them gets up and leaves and doesn't stay till the end, everybody's Jum'ah is invalidated. So whatever you need to do, you keep that person. No, I'm just kidding. You keep them there. So the 12 have to remain until the end, till the salam. the other people may be there too, like the temporary residents. So the three categories of people we're going to have are the ones who, by their presence, the Jum'ah is established, namely the 12 or more permanent residents. Then you'll have people who are obligated to go nevertheless, even though they're not permanent residents, who would be men who are temporary residents. Right? They would be obligated to go, but they would, the Jum'ah doesn't, they don't constitute the Jum'ah. They have to go, but if they go and leave, it doesn't matter. They're not part of the requisite 12. And then there are all the others who are not required to go, and they go anyway. But what we're looking at here is the first category, which is the 12 who need to be there. What is this based upon? There's a hadith of the Prophet ﷺ that's also mentioned in the Quran, Surah Al-Jum'ah, I think. وَإِذَا رَأُوا لَهْوًا أَوْ تِجَارَةً تَرَكُوكَ قَائِمًا قُلْ مَا عِنْدَ اللَّهِ خَيْرٌ مِنَ اللَّهُ مِنَ التِّجَارَةِ. And this was actually happened. If they find lahu or tijara, they find, you know, there's a caravan coming in, and many of the Sahaba actually got up and left while the Prophet ﷺ was doing Jum'ah. 12 remained. Who were the 12? They say, الْعَشْرُ مُبَشِّرِينَ بِالْجَنَّةِ. Imam al-Shawkani says, the 10 مُبَشِّرِينَ بِالْجَنَّةِ, the 10 will promise paradise, which include the 4 khulafa. So Abu Bakr and Umar, wa Uthman wa Ali. And the additional 2 were Bilal ibn Rabah wa ibn Mas'ud. They remained, the 12, and the rest didn't. And the Prophet ﷺ concluded Jum'ah with them. So they derive from the Malikiyyah, Imam Malik, from this, that تصح الجمعة بإثنى عشرة, that it's good for 12. The Shafi'i school says 40. So it's even a greater number. 40 people have to be there. And they have another hadith that indicates that the Jum'ah would not be valid except by 40 people. So the Malikiyyah took the lesser number. The Hanafi school, to my knowledge, only requires 3. So there's different opinions about how many the number have to be there. So they have to be there from the beginning until the end. وَإِمَامٍ حُرٍ مُقِيمٍ. And the imam also, as we said, is a condition. حُر, so it has to be someone, doesn't apply to us, but not in a state of bondage. And مُقِيمٍ. مُقِيمٍ means at least a temporary resident. Temporary resident means he's been there for 4 days or more, or has the intention to be there for, not he's been already there, but he's has the intention 4 days or more, he's not just passing through. So obviously that's problematic in the whole idea of guest khatib who is only there for the day or for that particular day, and they live a travel distance from their home. But again, this is a stipulation of the Maliki school, not of all the schools. And they have these fiqh riddles or puzzles, and they said a group of 13 people and one of them has to be the imam. And if he's not the imam, then the prayer doesn't count. Who's the 13 people? One temporary resident and 12 permanent residents. So in this case, the one temporary resident, he has to be the imam. Nobody else, right? Because we said the 12 permanent residents, they're the ones who constitute the Jum'ah. So whoever the temporary resident is, they don't like it, they don't want to like it, you got to be the imam today. Because this is all, these are all the people who showed up. And it falls upon you if there's nobody else.
وَخُطْبَتَيْنِ بِمَّا تُسَمِّيهِ الْعَرَبُ خُطْبَةً دَاخِلِ الْمَسْجِدْ بَعْدِ الزَّوَالِ وَقَبْلِ الصَّلَاةِ تَحْضُرُهُمَا الْجَمَاعَةُ الْمَذْكُورَةَ فَأَكْثَرُ.
خُطْبَتَيْنِ means 2 خُطْبَةً. So we say خُطْبَةَ الْجُمْعَةَ, but technically it's 2. So typically the imam would do the first خُطْبَةَ and then end it in the typical fashion by asking the people to make dua, for example, or to seek istighfar, then to sit down, al-julus bayna al-khutbatayn, even though the julus is not shart, but it's customary to sit, and then begin the second khutbah. So those are what's meant by the khutbatayn.
Mimma tusammihi al-arabu khutbah,
that by which the Arabs consider to be a khutbah. So there's also varying kind of opinions about this particular aspect, like should it all be in Arabic? Can it completely be in another language or not? I think the middle position is that the preamble or the tamheed, which is like the beginning when you do hamdallah and thana and salat on the Prophet ﷺ and so forth, that can be in Arabic, and then you've technically, and you do a verse of Quran, then technically you've done a khutbah of what the Arab calls a khutbah, and then you can do the rest in whatever language. And if you do that for both of them, then I think inshallah, you've met the requirement. Some other schools are more strict, and they say the whole thing has to be in Arabic. That's why in some masajid you have this thing called bayan that comes first, which is the English part, which is technically not the khutbah, and then the actual khutbah part is very short, and the imam just most of the time recites from a book, a pre-prepared khutbah.
داخل المسجد, inside the masjid, so not outside the masjid, obviously. بعد الزوال وقبل الصلاة.
So بعد الزوال, after high noon, and قبل الصلاة, unlike Eid, which is the opposite. So in Eid, the prayer comes first, the khutbah comes second. In Friday, Jummah, the khutbah comes first, and then the prayer comes after that.
تحضرهما الجماعة المذكورة فأكثر.
So the 12 have to attend or more. In a town that has been established, right, or a town that has been established, and then they establish the Jummah there, and they have at least 12 permanent residents who constitute that community.
في جامع مبني على عادة البلد أو أفضل متصلا بالبلد أو في حكم المتصل.
In a jama, in a masjid, and just incidentally, the two words jama and masjid. Masjid means just regular masjid. So every jama is a masjid, but not every masjid. Every jama is a masjid, but not every masjid is a jama. So jama means a place where Jummah is done. So jama kitha. So it's also a mosque, but it's a congregational mosque. So that means Friday congregational mosque, the Jummah is done there. So when he says fi jama'in mabni, so at least for the Jummah, it's there.
Mabdin ala adat al-balad.
So it's made from, as we mentioned earlier, whatever is the customary building material of the people of that place. In other words, not temporary. So they said, laysa min al-khiyam, not like a temporary tent structure. And then after Jummah is finished, you take it down and you leave. That can't be Jummah. So it has to be something, as we said, built and dedicated indefinitely for Jummah.
أو أفضل, or even something better than what the people usually build with.
متصلاً بالبلد. It should be within the town as well, not very much outside of it. So not like far away. So if, you know, you have a town and they said, oh, well, we'll just buy that big plot of land, which is like 30 miles away, and we'll just pray there. Well, you're not in the place that you're doing it. You're doing it far away, which is another town, technically. So it should be either inside the town or very close to it. You know, something like a mile or two, that's fine.
أو في حكم المتصل, as we said.
So either in it or something that's very close to it.
متحدين. فإذا تعددت الجوامع فهي لأول جامع أقيمت فيه.
This condition is also there in the Shafi'i school, but no one really practices anymore.
متحد means a single congregational, Friday congregational mosque for whatever town or qariya that they're praying in.
So not to have two or three Jum'ahs, one.
So متحد means a single, unique, one Jum'ah. فإذا تعددت الجوامع,
however, if there's more than one,
فهي لأول جامع أقيمت فيه.
Then the true Jum'ah is the one where the first Jum'ah was held, if there's more than one. In longer works, there'll be exceptions to this. So if there's no room, if it's completely full in the oldest Friday prayer mosque. In other words, not necessarily the oldest mosque, but the oldest mosque where the first Friday prayer was established, then they can build others and have it in different places. And also they are to exhaust not just the masjid itself, but any like surrounding streets that are muttasil, they said. So sometimes, and you find this in some Muslim countries, certainly in Cairo you see this sometimes, where the rows extend outside of the mosque. But if there's ittisal, right, if the rows are one after the other, even if they go to extend outside the mosque, then their Jummah is valid. And you actually find this in the Haramain too, in Mecca and Medina, that's also prevalent. That happens. As long as there's this kind of closeness and ittisal, connectedness of the rows. So generally, you know, the reason for that is, you know, Jummah is a place where Muslims come together and there's kind of a unifying presence and message. You know, I used to call it designer Jummah. Everybody kind of does their own little Jummah under their apartment building or, you know, in their place of work, and it kind of defeats the purpose of Jummah. Jummah means to congregate, means to bring people together. It means to kind of come and all of us together as a group. So, you know, if you think about the social aspect of the prayer, so you have the five daily prayers where people who pretty much live in close proximity, where they can walk to the mosque, will see each other five times a day if they're praying the five prayers. And then once a week, they may have to move a little bit further. Here, he didn't mention it, but the general distance for you to go to Jummah is about 3 miles away, something that you can reasonably walk probably in. You may have to go a little bit further to join the Friday congregation, but then you see people from neighboring neighborhoods that you don't normally see. So you see them once a week. And then you have the group of people that you're seeing daily. And this is how kind of like the social fabric of society is established. So when you have multiple Jummas, right, for the same place that can accommodate everybody in one place, then you kind of defeat that purpose. So the Ittihad, or having the one Friday mosque, is something that used to be done, but you don't see that anymore. فإذا تعددت الجوامع فهي لأول جامع أقيمت فيه. So if there's more than one, then the one Jummah that actually would not be considered invalid, and the rest would be technically invalid, would be where the oldest Jummah is. Some of the mutaakhirin, even the Tafsir mentions it, that this is no longer practiced, and kind of there's a rukhsa, there's a dispensation that, and especially in places where every Jummah is full, and it's completely full, and sometimes they do two and three Jummahs in the same mosque, then you have the excuse to pray in whatever Jummah that you can find.
So you mean the oldest the same day, the first one to start?
The first one to start, yeah.
وتحرم الصلاة مع الصحة في رحبة المسجد وطرقه المتصلة به إلا إذا ضاق واتصلت الصفوف. And it's تحرم الصلاة مع الصحة في رحبة المسجد. And it's haram, even though it's valid, to pray in the outside area of the masjid. So, the way that masjid in Nabawi used to be before the expansion is the rahba was what we call now the sahan, which would be kind of an area in the middle, and that area that was leading into the inside part was open, but it's technically outside the mosque. Nowadays, that area kind of is enclosed, and then there's a building around it. But in those days, the rahba was the thing that was open. So you're not supposed to pray in that open area, you're supposed to go all the way to the front, inside the masjid. But if you were to do that, he said, ma sahha. It's valid, but it's haram. And this is sometimes confusing to people, like how can something be haram, but at the same time it's valid? Like a salah fil ard al-maqsuba. You know, if you pray, you know, you took over somebody's, you know, misappropriated somebody's land or home, right? Bunch of guys do a home invasion. Like, oh, did you get the safe? But it's time for salah. And so they pray dhuhr. Yani, you don't have no right to pray in that place. Right? It's haram what you did. But if they make tawbah and so forth later on, do they have to repeat that prayer? Yeah, technically it's valid. There's some khilaf, different opinion about that. But one opinion said that it doesn't have to be repeated. So in this case, it could be haram to do something. But if you wind up doing it, the thing can still be considered valid. So, and what that means is, you're not really going to get a reward for doing it, but you will not get punished for non-performance, is what it means. So when we do an obligatory act or an act of worship, there's kind of two components to it. You're rewarded for doing it, and also there's a type of reward for you doing it. And if you fail to do it, then there's going to be an accounting taking into place. So the part of failing to do it is removed, but you don't really get a reward for doing it in that sense. So that's Rahmat al-Masjid wa turuqihi, and the surrounding streets that are connected to it. So it's haram to just pray in the surrounding street if you have access to go inside the masjid, but it's still valid. The exception is illa idha daqa wa tasalat as-sufuf. However, if it's so crowded, and this happens in Mecca sometimes too, especially on Jummah, that literally you walk out of, if you have a hotel that's right next to where the white tiles are, you walk out and there's already rows there. And there's no way you can go inside. So you can pray right there. And that's not haram, and it's still valid.
However, if you were to pray right there, and there's plenty of space to go in, your prayer is valid, but you've kind of done something haram. So that would be for, like, in some of these hotels in Mecca especially, they have prayer rooms and viewing rooms where you can actually follow the prayer from that place. I would say for anyone except the infirm, like someone who's really, because it is quite a walk to get to inside the masjid and to go through, you know, crowds, and there's a level of difficulty in that to get to it. So for people like that, they have the excuse they can pray in that room and follow the Salat al-Jum'ah or any Jama'ah. And inshallah, it's not haram for them. But for someone who has the ability to do so and just kind of laziness, yes, the prayer is valid there, but you know, you should have went inside if you can. Now he's moving on to the Sunan. غُسْلٌ مُتَّصِلٌ بِالرَّوَاحِ لِكُلِّ مُصَلِّنْ. So it's sunnah to have first a ghusl, purificatory bath, muttasil bil-rawah, which means it should be preferably done like immediately before or a little bit before you actually go to Jummah. So it's valid after Fajr, anytime after Fajr, but it should be preferably muttasil bil-rawah. Yani you did the ghusl, you put on a tib, if you're a man, some sort of musk or perfume, and then you went on your way to Jummah. That would be the optimum way to do it. However, let's say you did your ghusl in the morning, then you went to work, and then from work you're going to Jummah, then there's not enough time for you to do another ghusl, that's okay. But here, if you have the opportunity and the time, then that would be the proper way to do it. وَاسْتِقْبَالُ الْخَطِيبِ حَالَ الْخُطْبَتَيْنِ. And this is one of, they say, the forgotten sunnahs, which is to face the khatib with your body while he's doing the khutbah. You know, nowadays we have people parking themselves in the back, leaning against, you know, the wall, sometimes with red legs outstretched, which is the su'adab. You shouldn't have your legs outstretched in towards the qibla in the masjid, especially when the khatib is speaking. And people should turn their body. So if the member is over here, I should technically turn and face him with my body and not just face forward. And this, all of the imams said that. That used to be a sunnah everybody practiced, but now it's kind of largely forgotten. People just, you know, there's, and they're not in tune with the khatib and the khutbah and so forth. And there's many reasons for that. It's a whole other kind of topic I'm not going to go into now. But, you know, if you can face the khatib and face the imam as he's speaking, then you should face with your whole body. وَيُنْدَبُ. Here the al-mandubat, which means things that are recommended to do, but not as strong as the sunnah level. تَحْسِينُ الْهَيْئَةِ. This is another one that's, I think, sometimes abandoned, which means تَحْسِينُ الْهَيْئَةِ means, you know, clean up for Jummah, please, and get yourself proper, you know, cut your nails and trim your mustache or your, you know, your beard a little bit if that needs to be done, and you know, get yourself in kind of a hay'ah, an appearance that's proper for Jummah. You know, in the United States, they used to have this tradition called Sunday best. We should be the ones saying Friday best, right? And people today go to Jummah with, you know, their t-shirts and their skinny jeans and, you know, with images on their shirts and all sorts of things that are distracting for the musallin as well as for themselves. There isn't this, haiba is not there anymore. The haiba, which means the reverence for that which we are entering upon in the Friday prayer. So tahsin al-hay'ah is important. وَلُبْسُ الْأَبْيَضُ, and wearing white. So the sunnah in Eid is to wear something new. The sunnah in Jummah, or the recommended thing in Jummah, is to wear something white, if possible. والتطيب for men, which means to put on some perfume or misk or something like that. والمشي لها والتهجير. المشي لها means to walk there, if you can walk there, but obviously if you have the ability to do so. والتهجير, which means to go early. And there's different interpretations of what early means. Some schools think early means that the sa'at qabl al-jum'ah, which means you actually go there from right after sunrise. And that would be considered a sa'at al-ula. The sa'at al-thaniya then would be the hour after that. And the thalitha was sadis. And there's a hadith about that, that the one who goes for sa'at al-ula, the first hour, كالذي ذبح أو نهر بدنة. بدنة means a big camel. And the one who goes in the second one is like someone who did a sheep. And the one who goes after that is like someone who did a chicken. And the one who goes right before is like someone who gave an egg. Or something out to this extent. So the tahjir means to go early. And again, for many people, that's not quite the possible thing to do, to go from right after sunrise. But I would say a minimum is try to get there before the khutbah starts. You know, and many people just show up right before the salam. Right before they want to get there before he says assalamu alaikum, the imam from the prayer. Now, to do so inadvertently is one thing, but to do so every week as a matter of routine, and that's kind of how you do it, then I would say that that's a little problematic. So tahjir, it's recommended to get there early to engage in dhikr of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, we need these routine moments in our week, in our days, in our months, where we just reflect and we have time to do that. And, you know, Jum'ah, or prior to Jum'ah, is a space there that's specifically, you know, established by the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam for that purpose. And so if you ignore it and you don't take the opportunity, it's like you're ignoring something, you know, it's a gift to you. And it's like saying, I'm not interested in that gift. وَتَقْصِيرُ الْخُطْبَتَيْنِ this also, I think, is kind of forgotten sunnah for some. وَالثَّانِي تُوَأَقْصَرُ. So تَقْصِيرُ الْخُطْبَتَيْنِ means not to spend too long on the two khutbas. تَقْصِير. The purpose of the khutbah, or the two of them, is الْمَوْعِظَة, التَذْكِير, right? It's to give admonitions, to remind people. It's not supposed to be a ders. It's not supposed to be like a proper Islamic lesson and lesson plan and learning outcomes and these sorts of things that, you know, people put into that, and then they spend an hour on the minbar. The khatib should take into consideration that people may have somewhere to go, especially most people who work Fridays, especially in Western countries, they're not off. And people's decreasing attention spans would also indicate that they'll suffer, you know, tiredness and boredom, and you might have people in the congregation who can't sit that long. So as a general principle, taqsir is nisabi, it's relative. What does short mean? Me personally, when I give a khutbah, I try not to go above 20-25 minutes maximum. In other words, the two of them. And then to be done with the whole thing within half an hour. And I think that's reasonable. And many of my teachers who I attended khutbah with, that's kind of where they're at. But people who spend like 45 minutes, you're not supposed to teach all of Islam in one session. You can't. Give them the mu'idah, give them kind of what they need, and then, move on. And then, فَإِذَا قُلِيَتِ الصَّلَاةُ فَانْتَشِرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ وَابْتَغُوا مِنْ فَضْلِ اللَّهِ فَإِذَا قُلِيَتِ الصَّلَاةُ, if the prayer is finished, then, ابْتَغُوا مِنْ فَضْلِ اللَّهِ اذْكُرُوا اللَّهُ وَابْتَغُوا مِنْ, remember God and go seek your risk, go seek what you need to do. So, shouldn't be something that is laborious, especially for people who may not be that religiously committed, and the one religious commitment they do all week is just Friday Jum'ah. And I really think that the islah al-ummah, the rectification of the ummah, one of the main points that has to be fixed first is Jum'ah, is what we do on Friday, which is the weekly gathering. And most Muslims nowadays, even if they're just not that committed, they still go to Jum'ah. And they go because they feel like they have to go. And to be honest with you, to sit through a lot of these khutab, it's like, it's torture. You know, it's not relevant, it's not addressing the people where they're at, it's more about the khatib and trying to show off their prowess than addressing what should be a timely message to the constituents, to the congregants. So there has to be, I think, a reform or revival of Jum'ah. So تقصير الخطبتين والثانية أقصر, and the second one should be a little bit shorter. ورفع الصوت بهما, and raising one's voice. Now we have microphones and speakerphones and so forth, but it should be enough that everybody hears you. One of the things that they do in some Muslim countries also, which is, I think, not of the Sunnah, is to have the microphone broadcast to the outside of the mosque. And so on Friday, you hear this cacophony of a khutbah here and a khutbah there and a prayer here and a prayer there, and it's all this just like a cacophony, and it's not necessary. It's enough that the people inside the mosque hear it, and it's not necessarily need to be broadcast people outside the mosque, especially when there's a mosque two blocks over who's doing the same thing, and then you just, you know, hear all of this going on.
وَبَدْءُهُمَا بِالْحَمْدِ لِلَّهِ وَالصَّلَاةُ وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَى النَّبِي صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمُ وَخَتْمَ الثَّانِيَةِ بِيَغْفِرُ اللَّهُ لَنَا وَلَكُمْ. And it could begin with saying Alhamdulillah, any siga of Alhamdulillah, وَالصَّلَاةُ وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَى النَّبِي صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمُ. And to finish the second one with يَغْفِرُ اللَّهُ لَنَا وَلَكُمْ, like a type of dua, may Allah forgive us and you. So we don't, the Maliki school doesn't have a specific requirement for anything specific to be said, unlike the Shafi'i school, but it is from the Sunnah to say, begin with the Hamdala or Mandubat, the recommended things to say Alhamdala, Salat on the Prophet ﷺ, to mention probably at least one verse, one hadith, things like that during the khutbah, and to deliver a message. Those are kind of the main broad strokes or outlines of the khutbah. Now the things that are haram, وحرمة سفر مقيم بعد الزوال. So amongst the things that are haram for the muqim, in other words, for the person who Jum'ah is obligatory for, right, for them to travel right after Zawal. Like, then happened, oh, look, I'm traveling, time to go. Unless there's a darura, unless there's a necessity to do that. If they're doing it specifically to avoid the Jum'ah, then that's where the problem is. But like, your flight is at 1:30, and you need to get to the airport, and then that's just the way it is, then you need to catch your flight, right? And so then you would do that. And the same would apply to someone who is a permanent resident, and they have to travel on Friday. Technically, if you travel after Fajr, you're still required to go to Jum'ah. But in modern, you know, travel, you can't really have a lot of leeway with flights and things like that. So, you know, ashab al-darura, people of necessity, there's an excuse there. But to kind of deliberately to avoid a religious obligation is what he's talking about here. وَتَخَطٍ, another forgotten etiquette. التخط, or التخطي, means you come in late or you come in whatever time, people are already sitting there, and you kind of walk over people's shoulders and to get toward the front. This is called the takhatti. You're like, oh, excuse me, brother. Wait, you know, and then my favorite is like this. Hello, I've arrived. Give me my space to pray. And, you know, the imam is in the middle of the khutbah already. And we'll see in the Maliki school that if the imam is already on the minbar, you don't do any prayers. The Shafi'i school says you could. But in the Maliki school, you know, I'll be like, what, parting the Red Sea? What do you want? You know, just like, no takhattin. You should go where the last row is. So even if you want to pray, you want to sit down, you shouldn't jump over people's necks and walk around them and disturb them while the khutbah is going on in order to get to the front.
Allahumma alimna. Wa kalamun hal al khutbataini aw baynahuma walau lam yasma' wa salamun wa raddu وتشميت عاطس ونهي لاغ أو إشارة له.
So these are things dealing with what should not be done during the khutbah. One, كلام حال الخطبتين, to speak, another forgotten adab. Shouldn't be speaking during the khutbah, like discussing, you know, the Eagles playoff chances to the person next to you during the khutbah.
أو بينهما,
or even in between them, just because it's like intermission for the khutbah time doesn't mean that you can talk about the football intermission. So he took the break between the khutbatain, you're still in Jum'ah. So you shouldn't be speaking to the person next to you.
وَلَوْ لَمْ يَسْمَعْ, even if you're too far to listen to hear them, let's say it's a place that doesn't have a strong microphone, you're far away and you can't hear them, still the adab is to sit quietly and not to speak during when the khutib is speaking.
وَسَلَامٌ وَرَدُّهُ, also to give the salam as you are entering.
Imam is speaking, hey guys, assalamu alaikum. That's not the time for it. وَرَدُّهُ. And even the one who says, وَعَلَيْكُمُ السَّلَامُ. Because al-kalam حَالَ الْخُطْبَةِ حَالَ الْجُمْعَةِ حَرَامُ. Speaking during the khutbah is haram. It's like the same as speaking during the prayer. Because why is the Jum'ah salah two rak'ahs and not four? Because the khutbah, the first and the second, right, they're two, one and two. They take the place of the two rak'ahs that we'd normally do for dhuhr. So if you speak during them, it's like someone who spoke during prayer, which would also invalidate the prayer. Doesn't invalidate Jum'ah, but it's haram. What tashmitu atis, or even to say, يَرْحَمَكُمُ اللَّهُ, to someone who sneezes. Again, speaking to one another, except for islah, right? Except for something that is of a necessity for the Jum'ah itself, like someone needs to, some emergencies happening outside, they need to inform somebody, that's an exception. But otherwise, not even tashmit atis, not saying يَرْحَمَكُمُ اللَّهُ, someone who sneezes. وَنَهْيُ لَغٍ أَوْ إِشَارَةٌ لَهُ, or even to tell someone to be quiet. So someone is speaking like, hey, dude, it's Jum'ah. That's haram too. So the sin is upon him, the one who's doing that. Salatin بعد خروج الإمام للخطبة. This we just mentioned, to pray or start a prayer after the Imam has already sat on the minbar. He may have not even started the khutbah yet, but if he walked up to it and you just walked in, then you're supposed to sit down. If there's nobody on the minbar yet, yes, then the sunnah is to come and pray tahiyyat al-masjid, pray two rak'ahs before the khutbah begins. But once he's got up there, then you are to merely sit down. Shafi'i school allows it, so if you see other people doing it, it's okay. But in the Maliki school that we're studying, this is something that's haram. He doesn't mention it here, but also amongst the haram things is for anyone for Jum'ah that is wajib upon them, any commercial transaction, buying and selling at that time. Because you should just be busy with the Jum'ah. So from the one who's selling, if they have Jum'ah's wajib upon them, and to the one who is buying, also it's haram for both of them. So you want to make that stock sale and you're during the khutbah, and you want to get the price, you know, before it goes down, and you go on your app while the khutbah is going on and you sell some stocks, technically haram. Because you're buying and selling during the khutbah. And unfortunately, some Muslim countries, they actually have aswaq. They have markets right outside of the Jum'ah, and they may continue to sell things and do things even while the khutbah is happening, which is kind of, it's a violation. وَكُرِهَ, and it's makruh, تَخَطٍ قَبْلَ جُلُوسِهِ لِغَيْرِ فُرْجَهِ. So the first one was the imam already began, and you're walking around. Here, the imam didn't show up yet, but you're still trying to get and cut in front of people. لِغَيْرِ فُرْجَ, right? There's not an open space. You're just trying to find whatever you can sit to get in the front. This is makruh. If you do it while the imam is doing the khutbah, then it's haram. If it's before he gets up there, then it's makruh. وَتَرْكُ الْعَمْلِ يَوْمَهَا تَعَبُّدًا, and to abandon al-amal, your work, تَعَبُّدًا is the important part here. تَعَبُّدًا means thinking that it's a sacred day and it's too sacred to work. So Jum'ah for us is not a Sabbath. So it doesn't have the Sabbath meaning that we find in other traditions, that it's too sacred a day to do anything, right? To turn on the light bulb or to go on the elevator or even to work or to drive. The sacredness of the day, that's not from our tradition, that's not from Islam. That's other traditions. Ours is, it's a day of Eid. And the verse in Surah Al-Jum'ah says, فَإِذَا قُضِيَتِ الصَّلَاةُ فَانْتَشِرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ وَابْتَغُوا مِنْ فَضْلِ اللَّهِ. If the salah is finished, فَانْتَشِرُوا. That's why even it's the sunnah of the Malikiyyah not even to offer prayers after the Jum'ah is finished. The sunnah is to say, assalamu alaikum, assalamu alaikum, move, go, leave. And then go and seek out your fortune, seek out your rizq, وَانْتَشِرُوا. So it's, however, if it's an official holiday or official off day from work, then that's okay. But to say it's too sacred, تَعَبُّدًا يعني, that's not from the Sharia. The Sharia doesn't say that. وَسَفَرُ مُقِيمٍ بَعْدَ الْفَجْرِ. And also, as we mentioned earlier, someone who is muqeem, who is resident, to travel after Fajr is makruh. Except for the one, as we said, it's a darura. necessity, they got to get on a plane, or they're actually traveling and they're going to make Jumu'ah somewhere else. So if you're in Cairo and you can drive up to Alexandria and it's 2 or 3 hour drive and you'll make it up there, that's okay. You're praying it somewhere else. Wajaz, what are the permissible things? Hamdu atis. So if you sneeze and you say, Alhamdulillah, that's okay. Just don't expect a response from everybody else. Wata'minun, to say ameen. If the imam is making dua, to say ameen. Wata'awud, to say a'udhu bihim shaitan rajim. It's okay. These are adhkir wa dua. Wistighfar, andu dhikr sabab. And also to make istighfar. If the imam says to you, inna ta'imim kaman la dhanba lah, istaghfiru rabbakum, then he's giving you the opportunity, then you make istighfar. That's okay. Sirran fil jami'ah. But silently in all of them. Right, so it's not to make tashwish, not as to cause a disruption to your fellow congregants who are there during the Jumu'ah prayer. The next section is the A'dhar al-Jumu'ah. We'll go through that quickly. So these are the reasons why someone would not be required to attend Jumu'ah. A'dhar al-Jumu'ah kathira. There are many. Says one, al-matar wal-wahl. So rain. Here rain, assuming you're walking to it, and the roads are going to be difficult to pass through, and there's going to be like a hardship. Wal-wahl. Wahl means that the roads become muddy and you can't walk in them. And this actually happens in many places that receive heavy rains during, you know, the rainy season or the monsoon season, and they're mainly dirt roads. They become completely impassable. You can't even walk in them. So this still happens. Waljudham al-mudir bira'ihati. Someone who is in a type of sickness. Here he mentions leprosy, but someone who is a type of sickness where there's actually a foul smell that's emanating. There's no sin upon them, but then they shouldn't go to Jumu'ah. It's an excuse not to go to Jumu'ah. Wal marad, as we said, to be sick in general. Wal tamreed, taking care of someone who is sick. واحتضار قريب أو نحوه. هذا في حكم المريض. Someone who is on their deathbed, or they're close to it, or you're attending someone on their deathbed, or close to it. That's an excuse not to go to Jumu'ah. فأولى موته. I don't know why he says that, but especially if they die, then they don't have to go. Or actually what he's saying is the person who is attending to the person on their deathbed, that person dies, then you have to take care of things, you don't have to go to Jumu'ah, I think is what he means. وَخَوْفُ حَبْسٍ أَوْ ضَرْبٍ أَوْ أَخْذِ مَالٍ ظُلْمًا. Or there's a legitimate fear that you'll be imprisoned or arrested or beat up, or someone steals from you. ظُلْمًا. ظُلْمًا means wrongly. وَعَدُمْ مُجُودِ قَائِدٍ لِأَعْمَى لَا يَحْتَدِ بِنَفْسِهِ. If someone is blind and there's no one to lead them, to take them to Jumu'ah, and they can't get there on their own, then they have a valid excuse not to go.
وَكَذَلِكَ مَنْ لَا يَجُدْ مِنَ اللِّبَاسِ إِلَّا مَا يُزْرِي بِهِ وَيُخِلُّ بِمُرُوءَتِهِ.
Also someone who doesn't have enough or proper clothing to clothe themselves to go. And this is true for many. You know, he says here, وَيُخِلُّ بِمُرُوءَتِهِ. Yani it's something that would be a violation of kind of people see them in clothes that's not proper for them, especially specifically it would be مُخِلِّ الْمُرُوءَةِ, right, of their reputation. So that someone also has a valid excuse.
وَيَجِبُ, and it's also for on the part of the individual مُصَلِّي, the congregant, تَجَنَّبُ مَا فِيهِ رَائِحَةٌ كَرِيهَةٌ وَإِزَالَتُهَا إِذَا وُجِدَتْ إِنْ أَمْكَنْ وَإِلَّا تَرْكَ الرَّوَاحِ.
Usually they mention this in terms of garlic and onions. So any sort of foul smell that you may have on you, you don't go to Jumu'ah with that. But it's not just garlic and onions. People who smoke also, don't immediately smoke right before you go to Jumu'ah. You have the smoke on you. Or any sort of foul odor. Then it's obligatory for you not to have that on you. If it's possible. And if you're unable to do it, illa taraka rawah, otherwise don't go. Because you're going to cause more of a disruption to the people there if you go with, you know, the particular order you have on you.
وَيَحْرُمُ, here he actually mentions it, and it's haram, الْبَيْعُ وَالْإِجَارَةُ.
So commercial transactions, we include buying and selling, renting.
وَسَعْرُ الْعُقُودِ,
بعد الأذان الثاني. And all other commercial contracts and transactions, buying and selling, or renting, whatever it might be, بعد الأذان الثاني, after the second أذان. So the second أذان is when the imam goes on the minbar, right? The first أذان, he says, السلام عليكم. Before the first أذان, then he goes on the minbar, he says, السلام عليكم. And then the second أذان. Once the second أذان happens, he's about to start the khutbah, then all of these things become haram. And they're invalid. وَفُسِخَ مَا سِوَ التَّبَرَّعِ وَالنِّكَاحِ وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ. And fusikha means the contracts are considered rendered invalid except tabarru', except charitable giving. That's also kind of haram during the khutbah, but if you did it already, it's not invalidated. Wa nikah and marriage contract. Those two were not to be invalidated. Wallahu a'lam. And Allah knows best. And we will stop here, inshallah. Next time we'll begin with Salat al-Eidain, the Eid prayers, inshallah. الحمد لله رب العالمين